hppodcraft.com.
It was a dark, starless night. We were becalmed in the northern Pacific. Our exact position, I do not know, for the sun had been hidden during the course of a weary, breathless week by a thin haze which had seemed to float above us about the height of our mastheads, at whiles descending and shrouding the surrounding sea. With there being no wind, we had steadied the tiller, and I was the only man on deck. The crew, consisting of two men and a boy, were sleeping forward in their den, while Will, my friend and the master of our little craft, was aft in his bunk on the port side of the little cabin. Suddenly, from out of the surrounding darkness, there came a hail. "Schooner, ahoy!" The cry was so unexpected that I gave no immediate answer because of my surprise. It came again, a voice curiously throaty and inhuman, calling from somewhere upon the dark sea away on our port broadside. "Schooner, ahoy!" "Hello?" I sung out, having gathered my wits somewhat. "What are you? What do you want?"
"You need not be afraid,"
answered the queer voice, having probably noticed some trace of confusion in my tone.
"I am only an old man."
That is the opening of William Hope Hodgson's A Voice in the Night, a short story that Lovecraft may or may not have read, but we know that Lovecraft liked Hodgson, so we're going to talk about it and this story here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
We are here at hppodcraft.com. I am Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey.
And our reader, of course, you know him, you love him, the amazing Andrew Lehman.
I love him.
Everybody does. Hey, you know, CDs of the new Dark Adventure Radio Theater episode are shipping this month. The White Tree, A Tale of Inspector LaGrosse. It is an original tale featuring one of the heroes of Call of Cthulhu, Inspector LaGrosse. And he's facing a new threat in the bayous of Louisiana. So go over to CthulhuLives.org to check that out and get your copy. Because if you don't, it makes Andrew cry.
That's the last thing anybody wants.
Exactly. So go buy that CD.
We're going to continue this month with our theme, Creatures from the Black Lagoon, though this creature really isn't a sea creature or even water-based, but a large portion of it takes place in a lagoon.
Yeah.
So there's that.
It's a nautical adventure, though. I mean, it's like a mystery out at sea. I think one time we were doing this month, this Creatures from the Black Lagoon, and one of the stories we did was a giant spider in a hot spring. Or something
That's
like
true.
That. So the bar has been lowered sufficiently that this qualifies.
Yeah, it works.
It's connected.
But I'm willing to forgive this tenuous connection because this story is flipping creepy.
Yes.
This is very weird in the truest weird sense.
I'd read this right after we recorded the last episode on slime, which was such a fun monster story.
Yeah.
This was quite a bit of a downer in contrast.
Yeah.
But it really got me. The writing's beautiful, and it's as you say, it's very weird and just a melancholy story.
So let's get into it. The narrator, this guy George, his ship is stuck in the middle of the North Pacific Ocean. They're lost, and it's been really overcast, and they can't see the sun or make out the stars.
Yeah, a sort of mist has descended over the ship and blocked all visibility, and there's no wind either, so it's incredibly still. I've actually been on a ship out at sea when something like this happened, and it is really the eeriest feeling. Already, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Can't see land anywhere. And then these curtains of fog come down and you feel even less connected to the world. You're just in this little island of your own. It's just the strangest, eeriest feeling.
It's nighttime in the story and George is on deck and he's just looking out in the darkness, hoping to see anything, really. Mm-hmm. The captain is his buddy, this guy Will, and there's also some crew, two men and a boy. Everyone else is asleep except for the narrator. Mm-hmm. While he's spacing out, he hears this voice yell, "Scooter ahoy!" And he's totally surprised and taken back because he thinks he's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And there shouldn't be anybody out there. And the voice calls again, "Scooter ahoy!" And he answers, and the voice in the dark says that he's just an old man. That's what we heard in the beginning that Andrew was reading for us.
Right, exactly. He says, "You need not be afraid. I'm only an old man." And I'm sure that's the last thing a few people have heard before, you know. Yep. I've read enough Lovecraft to know that you should always be afraid of old men.
Absolutely.
He could be terrible.
He could be terrible, or he could be thinking of vittles.
Yeah. He could have a curious book down in the boat with him.
And now the narrator thinks that this guy sounds strange. Something is up with his voice, but he doesn't know what it is exactly.
Right. Curiously throaty and inhuman. And I was thinking at this point, maybe it's a ghost.
Yeah.
That seemed like the most logical thing, especially because the mist came down and he can't see him.
Makes sense. That's
some kind of pirate ghost or something.
It's a good leap of logic there.
Mm-hmm.
So George asks this old guy to come along the side of the ship. And the old man says he can't do that. It wouldn't be safe. So the narrator's like, what are you talking about? Why isn't it safe? What's going on? Were you a pirate? What's happening? And the guy just doesn't answer back. So George lights a lamp and he starts banging on the deck to wake Will up. He then tries to shine the light in the direction of the voice, and then he hears a muffled cry and the sound of oars dropping into the water and quickly paddling away.
I like George's line here. He goes, hello there. What foolery is this?
Yeah. I don't say foolery enough. Then Will comes up. George fills him in, and then Will thinks on this for a bit. And then he yells, boat ahoy! And from a distance, he hears the reply, and the oars row back, and the old guy yells, put the light away. George says, I'll be damned if I will. But Will says, dude, chill out. The other ship comes a little bit closer, and he puts the light out. Again, they can't see anything because it's night fog, but they can hear the boat. Will tells him to come alongside, and he's got nothing to be afraid of. And George asks, why, old man, are you afraid of the light? And Will whispers to George, just let me handle it.
Yeah, because I think George is maybe a little more easily annoyed than Will.
Yeah. Will says to the old man that this behavior out in the middle of nowhere is, kind of fishy.
Yeah, not just pretty fishy. He says, how are we to know what sort of a hanky-panky trick you're up to? Which made me laugh. Listen, I'm all for a few hanky-panky tricks. I just like to know what sort of trick I'm getting involved in. How can I do hanky-panky tricks with you if I can't even see you? Come now. What sort of hanky-panky trick is this?
Oh, golly. So the oars start rowing away, and the old guy just says, I'm sorry. Sorry. I would not have troubled you, only I am so hungry, and so is she.
Yeah, the voice sounds extremely hopeless and pathetic. Any suspicions I had were starting to go away that this guy is there to harm them.
The old man, he rows away, and Will shouts for him to stop and come back, and then he yells, okay, look, I'll kill the light. Will says to George that he doesn't think there's anything to be scared of. George thinks that the guy might be possibly some kind of shipwreck survivor, and he's just kind of off his nut because he's been out here for so long, but he's not necessarily dangerous. George puts the lamp inside of the ship, and Will asks the old man to come aboard. Again, it's dark, so they can't see the old man. And he says, I can't. It's too dangerous.
Mm-hmm. He says, I dare not even pay you for any provisions you could give me, because that would require me to get too close to you, and it's unsafe.
Yeah, Will says, that's fine. You can have as much food as you need. The old man thanks him profusely. He says, you are very good, exclaimed the voice. May God, who understands everything, reward you. Will asks if the lady is with him, and the old guy says no, that he left her on the island. And George is like, what island?
We've got an island we're living on over here.
Yeah, that's what's going on. So Will suggests that they go and rescue the lady, and the old guy just goes, no!
Yeah, no, he says, it was because of our want I ventured, because her agony tortured me. Oh, I feel so bad for him.
Will calms him down and then goes below deck and fetches some food. When he comes back, he asks the old man to pull up alongside, and he says, no, I dare not. George says, this is really bothering me. We got to get this guy food. So in the darkness, they put out a box and they floated it out towards the old man, and they heard him make a cry of joy. So they knew that he got it.
Right.
And he blesses them profusely and then just roves away. Will thinks that they should be off, but George says, you know, I think that old guy's going to come back. And Will and George just stay awake for a while, kind of too freaked out about what happened to go back to sleep or sleep at all. So they wait there for 3 hours, and then they hear the oars rowing again.
Right. He goes back. He says, sorry, I forgot to ask for napkins and silverware. And also a little stone ground mustard would go down pretty good. I don't want to be picky, but this yellow stuff you gave me, it's not, I don't prefer it.
They hear the old man yell, schooner ahoy. And he thanks them again for the food. And George asks about his lady. And he says, the lady is grateful now on earth. She will be more grateful soon in heaven.
Uh-oh.
The guys are a bit confused by this, but the old guy has come back to tell them his tale.
Right.
He and his lady had a talk, and they think that it's best that somebody else knows what happened. They were on a boat called the Albatross. George knows the ship and he says, yeah, she left Newcastle for Frisco some 6 months ago and hasn't been heard of since.
Right. And the Albatross, of course, is a seabird, which has a lot of metaphorical implications. I don't think it was an accident that that's the name of the ship.
Sure.
And some used to believe that albatrosses were the souls of lost sailors, you know, so it was bad luck to kill them. Most of the myth around the albatross comes from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. In that poem, an albatross is following the ship, which is good luck, but the mariner kills it with a crossbow. And that's a bad omen. And of course, the things in the voyage start going really badly. And he feels like the other sailors are looking at him and seeing this albatross hanging around his neck. Because he's the one that shot it and brought this bad fortune on them. So that's where the metaphor comes from, that, you know, having an albatross around your neck means you're carrying a burden or you're cursed.
So a storm hits the ship and it started taking water. The crew abandoned the ship and left the man and his fiancée on board the sinking ship. They didn't know they were still on board or
they knew and they didn't care. It says they were entirely callous through fear. So they were just freaking out. Forget everybody else. This sounds so scary. When they came up on deck, they saw only small shapes on the horizon of the ships leaving. It made me think of, you know, when you're a kid, that fear of getting lost, so potent.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously that goes away as an adult because you can find your way around the world and you know what resources you have available to you, except when you're in situations like this where there are professionals you have to rely on, right? On a ship or even when you're on a plane or with a guide in a strange city. Or foreign city, you know, you kind of have to surrender your independence to others. And that's a scary thing because if they leave you, you're totally screwed. I can't steer the ship. I can't navigate. I can't fly this plane.
I can't speak the language.
I can't speak the language. I don't know my way around. So those things can still happen to you as an adult. And this triggered that feeling for me when this happened to them. I thought it was a horrific way to start what's going to become a far more horrific experience for these poor people.
So they're pretty freaked out by this, and they know that they had work to do. If they're going to try and survive, they're going to have to make a raft. So they take parts of the ship before, you know, as the ship is sinking, they're trying to build a raft with it, and they get a bunch of food, and then they set off on the raft. And that's when they encounter heavy fog.
Maybe it has something to do with the thing that they later encounter? Like, is this some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? What's Galactus? And what's the relationship of Silver Surfer to Galactus?
Oh, Herald.
Yes. Perhaps this is some herald of the fungus. I don't know.
So they drifted for 4 days within this haze. So they couldn't tell where they were going, even if they knew how to navigate, which he didn't say they did. It's just darkness and haze. On the fourth night, in total darkness, they felt they were moving a little quicker over some breakers, and then it smoothed out. And as dawn came, they could see they were in a great lagoon. In this lagoon, there was a large sailing vessel.
And there's some good writing here. It says, "We fell upon our knees and thanked God, for we thought that here was an end to our perils. We had much to learn."
Oh, yeah.
Poor people.
They move the raft towards the ship, and they see that on it is this gray lichen, which is growing in patches, but it's covering most of the place. Even the rope that the old guy grabs onto to climb up onto the boat is covered in this lichen. You know, I wasn't sure what lichen looked like, because I know what moss looks like, and I know what mushrooms and fungus, so I looked it up, and lichen's pretty gross.
It's really gross, yeah.
It's really creepy looking.
It's a mold algae combination, right?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly it. And I know that tauntauns survived on it, on Hoth.
That's is that right? What
they, yeah. That's old expanded universe stuff, so I don't know.
That might not be true now.
It's not. It might not officially, it's not officially canon anymore, but I'd like to think that it's probably true.
Tauntauns are tough.
Yeah, well, they gotta eat something.
Yeah.
They can't just eat snow.
No.
No.
That's absurd.
That is, that is absurd. So he got on the boat, started looking around for people. Much of the place was covered in this gray lichen, and he realizes that there are no people and this place has been empty for a long time.
What's so creepy is the lichen is covering the deck in these great patches, but in some places it rises into nodules several feet in height.
Yeah.
So almost like little mold hobbits here and there. I really didn't like that.
Yeah, it's really unsettling. He finds a rope ladder and uses it to help his lady get on board.
Right. They check the whole ship, all the cabins. Nobody there. It's just the fungus. But the lady is optimistic. She's like, we can clean all this up.
Sure. They look around and do a thorough search and see if there's any supplies they can use. And they decide to stay on board. Maybe this will be their base of operations until they can figure out what to do next.
Right.
And they also find a fresh water pump. So they're like, all right, there's This freshwater pump will keep us going. Good times are rolling.
Yeah.
They stayed on board the ship for several days, but the lichen was a problem. After they cleaned it off, it would grow back in 24 hours.
Oh, so disgusting. If you've ever dealt with any kind of mold, one does tend to personify it, you know, because you clean up a little bit and then it comes back. We had to have our bathroom wall ripped out because of mold. We live in an old apartment building, and there was a leak that had been going on for a long time, and it was very unpleasant because at first it was just, hey, this part of the wall seems kind of soft. There's got to be a leak in there, right? Yeah, I think there's a leak. And then I'm messing with it, and my finger goes through the wall. Now there's a hole in the wall. Oh, great. We'll have to get that repaired. Then things start growing out of the hole because there's mold in there, you know? And at first it was just a couple of these little circular patches, and I was like, oh, man, if Heather sees that, she's going to lose her mind, you know? So I get like, you know, the Windex and clean it off and say, you know, we got to get the landlord to take care of us. And then like 2 days later, freaking mushroom is growing out of the wall. Sickly colored, bizarre mushroom is growing out of the bathroom wall, you know? Yeah. And then we had to wait a few days and then figure out how to get out of town so they could come in and rip it all up and clean it and fix it. And those days where we were still here, you know, you just feel so, it's like there's this organism in the house, you know, and it's growing. It's like, where is it? Where else is it in the walls? You know, I mean, I really was getting freaked out by it. It was very unpleasant.
Yeah, so you know how these people are going to be feeling in this story.
A little bit, just a little bit.
So they try harder to clean the stuff off. They find some carbolic acid on the ship and they use that to scrub it away, but it just keeps it away for a few days and then it comes back.
Right. And the terrible part is it doesn't just come back. It spreads. It says as though our touching it had allowed germs from it to travel elsewhere. Yeah. So this stuff is able to get around pretty well, too. They actually, by cleaning it up, they've made it worse.
And finally, what broke the camel's back was one morning, the lady woke up and she saw some lichen starting to grow on her pillow. And there's like, okay, we're out of here.
Yeah, done.
We're not staying on the boat.
We're checking out. He actually sees that it's invaded their belongings, too, in some places. Like, he finds some of it growing on one of her shawls. I thought it was a funny detail because he says, I threw the shawl overboard and I didn't tell her. And it's like, A, he didn't want to freak her out, but B, I wonder if a little was like, I don't want to fight with her about this shawl. I know she's going to want to keep it. No shawl is important enough.
This description here I thought was really good. The vile fungus which had driven us from the ship was growing riot. In places it rose into horrible, fantastic mounds which seemed almost to quiver as with a quiet life when the wind blew across them. Here and there, it took the forms of vast fingers, and in others, it just spread out flat and smooth and treacherous. Odd places, it appeared as a grotesque, stunted trees, seeming extraordinarily kinked and gnarled, the whole quaking vilely at times.
Ugh.
So, yeah, this is pretty gross stuff. They move off the boat, and they see that this lichen stuff is everywhere. It's in the lagoon. It's on the shore, and these big lichen mounds and these plants, they're just all over the place. And they're like, oh no.
It's everywhere.
They finally find this one place where the lichen's not growing. It was a smooth white patch of what appeared to be fine sand. And there we landed. It was not sand. It was what it was, I do not know. What?
I don't get that at all. So the lichen won't grow on this stuff that's not sand, but there's no explanation.
Yeah.
The whole thing is really surreal. Yeah, I don't know what the stuff is.
They went to shore on the white stuff and set up their tents and camped there.
I think the choice to make this an older couple was also pretty brilliant. Normally with these things, it'd be a group of shipwrecked guys. You know, they're slowly going mad. Maybe somebody has to shoot somebody to maintain discipline, right?
Right.
But this couple, they even say that during this time of camping, they're even a little happy.
Yeah.
And this idea of him wanting to protect her and the fact that there's this love between them and they're going through this together, it's a different kind of experience than if it had been a bunch of sailors, you know, fighting with each other. It just adds this sadness to the whole thing that's palpable.
It's really melancholy because there is their love and the relationship that keeps them, like you said, happy at times, and they're managing through this, but it's also all the more horrible because they're like nice people.
And metaphorically, I mean, they're an older couple. This is happening to all of us.
Sure.
Right? This section right here, right? Things are going well for a while, but then he sees on her hand that she's starting to grow the lichen on her hand. And it's this, try as we might, death is coming for us. And that's when you are in love with somebody, that concept is even worse. If it's just you, that's one thing. But knowing that this can't last forever is... In the real world, it's an awful thing. I mean, some kind of thing is coming for you and the people you love. Anyway, so she finds the thing on her hand.
Well, that's one of the things with children is that you get that constant reminder because they grow so fast.
Right.
Like you go, wow, they're really changing. They're really growing. Oh, wait, I'm getting old.
Yeah.
I'm dying. Like as they get older and they get stronger and they become, you know, that's me getting weaker and more frail and my mind will start to slip and all these things will happen. And that is very bittersweet part of parenthood, I feel.
Absolutely.
Like just you delight in their growth and their learning and all that stuff. And yet it's...
Yet they are here to replace you.
Yeah. They're the replacements. So like you were saying, she has this growth on the thumb of her right hand. They clean it off with carbolic and water and it goes away, but of course it returns.
Yeah. Did you ever get a wart or anything like that?
I had a wart on my finger when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And but it never came back.
I had one on my thumb. It was terrible. It would return. Because, you know, you have to use that stuff on it that's super destructive to your skin. Hurts. Yeah. Rips off a whole big patch of your skin and you go through that pain and okay, thank God it's over. And then a month later, what? It comes back and it makes you feel so disgusting too as a person, you know?
I had mine frozen off. They did that whole thing with the liquid nitrogen. Yeah.
Oh, I had to use the over the counter, whatever it was.
Oh yeah.
It was painful. I should have done that. I should have gone. Was your doctor, Dr. Freeze?
No, my doctor was Dr. Garantala Govindaya.
Oh, Dr. Govindaya.
Yeah.
But he had freeze powers of some kind.
No, just some liquid nitrogen. That's all he had.
Oh, okay.
And a freeze ray.
But okay.
He wasn't I wouldn't say he's like a cryogenic scientist or anything like that.
No.
Just because you have a freeze ray does not make you a cryogenist. That's a whole other thing.
That's a whole other dude. That's a different debate.
And then she notices that he's got a growth on his face, like on his hairline by his ear.
Right.
And so they clean themselves up. But again, they know they're in trouble. It's not going to stay gone. It'll come back.
Yeah.
And they kind of think, well, you know, we're in God's hands now. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen is going to happen. Months went by. The patches grew. Not quickly. They were surprised. But it still spreads pretty slowly.
Yeah.
They went out for supplies. The ship and lagoon has this big growth on it. It's like 6 feet tall.
Right. Those little mold hobbits are bigger.
They're huge. And at this point, they kind of give up hope on leaving because they know they never want to take this infection to other people. And they know they're going to die on that island. That like this is where it ends for them. And they have to make peace with that. So as time goes on, their food stores start to dwindle and there's no fishing in the lagoon, but they can go out into the sea and catch fish. But it's hard to catch fish, especially since you just got a raft and some, you know, some string maybe. I don't know. They don't say what they have, but they say they can't keep up with the demand. And by the end of the fourth month, they're starving. One day he came back from fishing and he saw his lady. She was in the tent and she was munching on something. He's like, whoa, where'd you get food? Mm-hmm. And then she was just kind of ditches whatever she was eating and she gets all dodgy and he realizes what it was. She's eating the fungus.
I kind of knew that was coming in a way, but it was still such a terrible turn.
Oh yeah. And she's embarrassed and then she gets angry about it and she's like, I was just so hungry and it's actually tastes really good. And he's like, but you can't eat it. It's going to make us worse faster. Mm-hmm. And then she promises never to eat it again.
Yeah, she admits to him that she actually, the preceding day, had tried it and liked it. It had just, this desire for it had come on really suddenly. Until then, she'd always experienced nothing but revulsion towards it. But it just, it's as if it kind of possessed her to eat it. Just so insidious.
Yeah. Since she was feeling strange about what had happened, he had went out into the fungus woods where the white sands kind of made paths. And he just kind of went for a walk.
Suddenly, I was called to myself by a queer, hoarse sound on my left. Turning quickly, I saw that there was movement among an extraordinarily shaped mass of fungus close to my elbow. It was swaying uneasily, as though it possessed life of its own. Abruptly, as I stared, the thought came to me that the thing had a grotesque resemblance to the figure of a distorted human creature. Even as the fancy flashed into my brain, there was a slight, sickening noise of tearing, and I saw that one of the branch-like arms was detaching itself from the surrounding gray masses and coming towards me. The head of the thing, a shapeless gray ball, inclined in my direction. I stood stupidly, and the vile arm brushed across my face. I gave out a frightened cry and ran back a few paces. There was a sweetish taste upon my lips where the thing had touched me. I licked them and was immediately filled with an inhuman desire. I turned and seized a mass of the fungus, then more and more. I was insatiable. In the midst of devouring, the remembrance of the morning's discovery swept into my mazed brain. Oh, it was sent by God. I dashed the fragment I held to the ground. Then, utterly wretched and feeling a dreadful guiltiness, I made my way back to the little encampment.
So he tells her what happened, and she's supportive and understanding.
Well, they're both hooked on fungus, and, you know, only other people who are hooked on fungus can understand, so he gets it now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, remember when you could special order that on TV? You can call the 1-800 number to get hooked on fungus?
Yeah, man.
Or am I thinking of something else?
Thinking of something else, okay. But let's just say you're right.
But he doesn't tell her about Lichen Man.
No, he doesn't tell her about the Lichen Man that he
saw. No, because he thinks that what that is probably one of those sailors from the boat, and that maybe eventually they're going to turn into lichen people.
Yes, I think that's what's going to happen.
And so for sure now, at that point, he's like, they don't eat any more lichen. But mm-hmm. The fungus grows more and more on their bodies, and they become less and less human.
Yeah.
A week ago, they ate their last biscuit and they caught 3 fish, and that's why they're out here. He's trying to fish some more. That's why he saw the boat and he hailed them. And he says, may God out of his great heart bless you for your goodness to a couple of poor outcast souls.
There was the dip of an oar, another. Then the voice came again, and for the last time, sounding through the slight surrounding mist, ghostly and mournful.
God bless you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, we shouted together, hoarsely, our hearts full of many emotions. I glanced about me. I became aware that the dawn was upon us. The sun flung a stray beam across the hidden sea, pierced the mist dully, and lit up the receding boat with a gloomy fire. Indistinctly, I saw something nodding between the oars. I thought of a sponge, a great gray nodding sponge. The oars continued to ply. They were gray, as was the boat, and my eyes searched a moment vainly for the conjunction of hand and oar. My gaze flashed back to the head. It nodded forward as the oars went backward for the stroke. Then the oars were dipped. The boat shot out of the patch of light, and the thing went nodding into the mist.
And that's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story, man. That
So the guy has turned into one of these.
Yeah, he's a moss man. Or a lichen man.
A lichen man.
This story really made me feel a lot of the same emotions I felt in The Color Out of Space.
Absolutely. It had that same sadness, that same destruction of the family through this infection.
Yeah. And that it was inevitable. Like, it's just going to happen, and it's going to be a slow process, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. It also reminded me of this older Stephen King story called Gray Matter. Do you know that mm-hmm. one? It's no. Like a guy gets workman's comp, and so he's just... for the rest of his life. So he hangs out at home, he's got a son, and he's just drinking all the time, and sends his kid out for beer. So his kid will go out and get beer, bring it back. Well, one day, like, the guy drinks some bad beer, has a little bit of mold in it, but he drinks it anyway. Mm-hmm. And then he starts turning into, like, a mold creature.
Oh, whoa.
When he craves warm beer, the boy has to keep going out and getting it for him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's got a framing device as well, I think, this one, where it's the boy at the convenience store talking to the people about what's happened to his dad. He's finally admitting it, because the last time he went to see him, his dad had hidden a dead cat in the wall. And he stares through a window, and he sees his dad take the cat out and gobble it down with his mossy lichen hands, you know.
Oh, so,
yeah,
no.
It's a good short story, and definitely could have been influenced by this.
Well, and there's that other Stephen King story that was in the first Creepshow, where it's actually Stephen King is in it, remember? And he's like the hillbilly who touches the stuff and that the moss grows on his body.
Right, it's a huge rip of Color Out of Space, or
yeah, yeah.
A riff on it. But there's that one too. So this was a great one. What are we going to do next week?
Next week, we are doing a double feature. We haven't done this in a while.
No.
Two short stories. They're very short. That's why I wanted to do two of them. One by H.G. Wells called The Sea Raiders.
Awesome.
And the second, Sea Curse, by Robert E. Howard.
Those are some good authors. I'm looking forward to that. I don't know anything about either of these stories. I'm going to give them a read later today.
I want to thank Andrew Lehman for being an exceptional human being. He's just all around fabulous, as well as a wonderful reader.
He's a great reader and a good guy. And hopefully we'll have him back again on the show soon. That's all we got for this week. I am Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
At hppodcraft.com.
hppodcraft.com.